This is Kalali out of Prince Frederick, Maryland right now. How you doing?
Hey, what's going on, man?
Nothing much, man. Just, trying to pick your brain a little bit.
Yeah.
It's a black man Sunday. Time to put all childish things away. I refuse to be the man I was yesterday. Gotta put my best foot forward and elevate.
Okay, let me ask you this question. What are some methods that we can use to leverage a network for new opportunities?
Oh yeah, man, I love this question. And here's the thing that I say about that is, again, I always think about networks. Again, networks is not passing out business cards or, going to after work happy hours or even going to conferences. Network is about finding people who are a community of people who are rooting for you to win. And what I mean by that is, like, some of the things that you can do for in your network can be people. It doesn't even have to have been your work best friend, but people you used to work with. How do you stay connected to them, right? I think LinkedIn is a great way to do that because it gives you some touch points. You're connected. You can reach out. You can find them when you can search for them and find them when you need them, or et cetera, right? The things that I think that you can do if you're in a job search, I would say most people do themselves a disservice by just spraying and praying. They applying to everything, right? Instead of applying to 500 things, think of a fine five that you truly believe that you qualify for and see, okay, here are these five jobs at these five different companies. Who do I know that works at one of those companies, right? So part of the network is getting in your group chat or asking your spouse to get in their group chat and say, who do we know that works at this company? Who do we know that works there? You're 8 times more likely to get a job at a company if you know somebody who works there. It doesn't have to even be somebody that you are close to, but you're 8 times more likely to get a job at a company if you know somebody who works there, right? So that's number one. Find out, if I know somebody that works at one of these particular companies, that's your network. And it may not be that you know somebody there. It may be that Corey knows somebody there. And you reach out to Corey and say, yo, Corey, I'm looking for a job over at LinkedIn. I know you know Drew. He works there. Connect me to Drew, right? Intro me. And then he introduces me to you. We have a conversation. Now you know somebody who works at that company. That's how networking is supposed to actually work, right? It doesn't mean that that Corey got to ask you a million questions about the job. It's just, I know Drew. You want to have a conversation with him, and then you and I have that conversation, right? And it's just a conversation. Our white counterparts don't think about networking as doing each other favors. They just think about networking as, like, I'm sharing this information with you. So that's one of the things that I think you could do. The other thing is that Black folks, the last thing that the ref says to us before, the last thing that the ref says to two fighters in a ring before they ring that bell is protect yourself at all times, right? And so part of protecting yourself at all times is that we know that sometimes we could end up in work environments that are not conducive to being Black in America, right? We have all known somebody that they saw something, they got a job and they got there and it was crazy, right? Part of one of the things that I think you can do with networking is having a conversation with somebody who used to work there or who currently works there, doing that research. I would also say do research on those companies, right? And like, okay. I don't see no Black folks on the website. I don't see no Black folks in leadership. I don't know what this might not be the move, right? Like, it's looking real. It's looking like I might need to get out, you know? And so I think that that's the other thing too, is like your network helps you do your research. The other thing I would say about things that you can lean into for your network is lean into your network to not just figure out what the culture is like, lean into your network to say, okay, well, do you know what, do they pay well, right? What's the culture like? Would you go back and work there again? That kind of thing, I think, is some of the things that we can get from networking that is just beyond what that normal day-to-day is. The other thing I would say too is, listen, my group chat has saved my life, right? And so part of that is, me having somebody that I can say, yo, did they give me all the interns from Howard because I'm Black? And to have that person come back and say, yeah, they did give you all the interns from Howard because you black. And here's what you need to do with them interns. So them interns have an amazing experience so that they get hired at that company when they leave, and that they don't have five drinks at the karaoke, right? Like them, your intern, you got to look out for them. That's what you're supposed to do. And that's what we need, is that community of truth tellers and information sharers. That's what your network really is.
I definitely appreciate that answer, man. You spoke a whole lot about information sharing, and I don't know why. I mean, I have my ideas on why, as black folks, especially minority folks, especially, we don't share information as much as possible. I think, you know, that it goes towards, you know, I'm diverging a little bit, but I was listening to a podcast today, and it was Terry Crews up there, and Terry Crews was talking about, you know, once he shared the competition mentality, he said he got out of a competition mentality. Like, he wasn't in competition with everybody. He was just trying to appreciate and see everybody succeed. He said, once he got into that, I thought the thing that struck me the most about what he said was once you get out of the competition mentality, then that's when true creativity can happen. You know what I mean? And I think too often, you know, particularly the minority people, we're stuck in that competition mentality. And so for that reason, we don't share information. That's where I'm really going with this, is we don't share information because it's like, well, if I share information with you, then that means you know everything I know, plus whatever you know, you might have a leg up on me. You know what I'm saying? So how can we, what are some things we can do to encourage information sharing amongst ourselves?
Yeah, man. Listen, I start with younger people and tell them all the time, it's like, listen, we got to collaborate and not compete. That's number one. It's like all these people out here that you can compete with, it shouldn't be amongst each other, right? That's number one. Like, let's just take that off the table and figure out ways to where there's enough food at all of these tables for everybody to eat. And if I'm in an environment where they only want one shiny black person, that's the wrong environment for me to be in, right? So like, just, we need to sort of like disavow ourselves of that sort of competition mode. Financial mobility starts with financial stability. And part of that stability is information sharing, knowing having the best information to make the best decisions possible about work and compensation. That's number one. The second part is go where you can grow, is to find environments and work environments where you can actually thrive, where you can be authentic, because your environment matters a lot. And some, you can't leave it to chance. And a lot of that information sharing is also about the L's that you took, right? Like, I'm like, yo, I was there. If you look at my resume, I was only there for a year. What is that? Like, so Drew, you were there. I'm thinking about going there. You were only there for a year. What's up? Right. And so now we have to build a relationship where I can trust you to tell you, hey, here was what my experience truly was. Here's why I was only there for a year. Right. Here's why I don't talk about it when I go on podcasts or I go on TV. I don't really talk about that line on my resume. I did it. I did the work. It was great work when I was there, but I was there for a year. Right. The other thing I think is that once we get out of that competition mode and we start to take some of that ego and shame out of money, it sets us up for financial stability in a lot of other ways too. Because here's the thing about the black middle class and the black working class that is unique to us, that our white counterparts don't really deal with, is that for you, the person that has the good job in the family, you got to always choose between grandma and Gucci, right? And what I mean by that is that statistically speaking, the black middle class is fragile, right? And so when Big Mama don't have enough money for her pressure medicine, whoever in the family with that good job, you definitely getting that call about Big Mama's pressure medicine, right? And that's not a call that most of our white counterparts get. And so you know you getting that call, like when grandmama water heater breaks down. And so you have to also start to build into like your thought process is like, I'm not out here competing. I don't have to do the flash and the floss or whatever, because I want to be able to answer that call when Big Mama water heater breaks down. Mm-hmm. And then I think the other thing that is really important for us as it relates to us getting from stability to mobility and that financial stability is that we cannot afford to leave money on the table. Right. We don't have the luxury to not think about our job as more than just salary and bonus, right? Is that whenever possible, we have to think about total compensation. Every single benefit at that job, we need to figure out what's the value of that and how am I maximizing it? The thing that I talk to corporate people all the time is that young Black women, some of these companies will actually pay for you to freeze your eggs, right? You don't want to wait until you're 40 to say, oh, shoot, I should have done that, right? And two, it's $20,000 of free money, right? Or I'll say that, you know, women and people of color, particularly Black people at the top of the list of this, that don't actually participate in 401k matches, which is literally free money. Right? It's free retirement money. So maximizing that, we don't do that, but that's also part of your total compensation, let alone some of these companies that actually have employee stock purchase programs. I'll give you an example of that. Most tech companies, right? You could have the company I work for, you could have bought Microsoft at like $180, right? When the stock was down. And if you were an employee, you could buy it at 10% less. So you could have bought it at like $160. It's now trading at 400, right? So think about when you're starting to think about like, yeah, I'm going to sacrifice and make this purchase, but I know that it's a purchase that's going to get me more compensation later. And part of understanding total compensation is information sharing with other people who have made those decisions and who are not squirrely about talking to you about money. And sometimes that means going outside of your network. Sometimes that may even mean going outside of having, you need diversity on your personal board of directors too. So you need somebody from different cultures, somebody from, you know, who may think about these things differently, right? Who may have been educated differently about money so that you're smarter and you have better inputs on how you think about that money.
Yeah, yeah, definitely appreciate that. It's tough, man, because I know that was like, It's a mindset shift. Like I know when I first started in my career and stuff like that, I didn't even want to talk to my family about how much money I was making.
Oh yeah, I know.
You know what I'm saying? Like it's like, I'm from the streets, dog. We don't talk about that. You know what I'm saying? You want to catch me? Hey, man, don't worry about how much money. You see what I'm driving? Then you know,
right? And sometimes that ain't a real good indicator how much money you're making either, right? Like I know a lot of people driving around Lexuses. They're like, it's a ding in it. I'm like, you must ain't got no car insurance. You got no car insurance for that Lexus. You got that dent in the back. But here's what I will say, and I get it, bro. I'm the same way. I told you, I grew up in a household where talking about money was grown folks' business. We just didn't talk to my parents about money like that. And I recently got married, and part of what we were doing in premarital counseling is like, you know, I had to, you know, we did all this stuff for financial disclosure, we did a prenup and all this kind of stuff. And I was like talking to in premarital counseling, I was like, yo, I can't, like, don't nobody but me and Jesus know exactly how much money I make. I was like, I got some people that know about. I was like, I'm about to write it on this paper. Like, I know we in love, but I'm about to actually, like, write it all on the paper. Like, shit, like, this is crazy, right? Yeah. But what I will say to you is that once we start to think about that differently, like you ain't got to tell everybody everything, but you absolutely should have mentors or have people who are advising you that have a really good indicator, because there are people, and once you get to the level of trust where they will say to you, bruh, they not offering you enough money. That changed my life when that man said that to me. He said, oh, your salary is good. This is good. But this stock piece over here, which is how a lot of people build wealth, they lowballing you. They like, they're like, this is really low. Him having that conversation with me, man, one, it raised my confidence. It gave me more information. It allowed me to put some bass in my voice when I was asking for more money, right? And it changed the trajectory of my life, because where I started from, I worked at that job for another 6 years. If I had started down here as opposed to right here, it was so much that conversation and that candor that I got from it. So I had to put my little ego down and say, okay, well, here's what it looks like on paper. And I didn't know if my dollars was good or bad. I knew it was probably less than him, you know, which is hard for a man to sometimes do to have a, you know what I mean? But I'm telling you, I would much rather have that money over the course of the years that I've made from that than to have that one day of like my ego was intact when he probably might have thought that I was balling a little harder than I actually was, right? I'll take that any day, right? Especially when it comes to like my long-term ability to, one, if my grandma water heater go out, I got her.
It definitely was a mind shift for me. And once I started, I'm comfortable with it now. Like I talk money with just about anybody, you know what I'm saying? But like, I know when I first started out, it was like, nah, I don't want to talk to y'all about money. I don't want to talk.
Right. I don't know if I'm high or low.
Right. I don't even know. For me, it was just like that. That's just like part of your upbringing. Like, you like, I don't talk to people about how much money I make. You never gonna know. You will never know how much money I make. But I'm different now. I'm different. You know, I changed my mindset because I realized, because it's more opportunity in letting people. And like you said, you don't have that conversation with everybody, but within your network, having those conversations, because then people can show you, hey, you know, right here, you actually could have came up right there, or you can still come up right there if you do this, this thing or that thing. You know what I'm saying? So having that conversation is better than not having. I had a similar experience with what you had actually in a job interview, where the person interviewing me was actually looking out, because now I'm just saying this to highlight the fact that sometimes we don't even know our own value.
Yes.
You know, where I was negotiating for a particular job and they were like, hey, you know what I'm saying? Well, what do you want to get paid? And I said a number, right? And then the lady looked at the number. She said, you really should be asking for $15,000 to $20,000 more dollars than what you're asking for. Now, she could have just been like, okay, boom, boom, boom. You know what I'm saying? Because I don't know if people know, but jobs have ranges. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, they could pay you $20,000 a year, or they could pay you $60,000 a year. It depends on what they negotiate for you. So, you know what I'm saying? They just been like, okay, that's what you want? All right, boom, and been with it. But she was like, nah. So she plussed me up like $10,000. She said, this is what you should ask for. And she just sent it in. And I ended up getting, at that point, more money than I had ever made before in my life. So yeah, definitely. But I didn't know that because I wasn't having those conversations. I didn't even know what I was worth in that particular market. I didn't have a proper network, any of those things. So that's why I think what you're saying is so valuable. You know what I'm saying? And I hope people are really catching, are really catching that. One thing I want to say before I let you go, I'm probably asking too many questions.
I'm with it.
One thing I want to ask before I let you go, because I'm also one of your colleagues in the DEIA space. Yeah. And you know, a question definitely has definitely come up in terms of like, and so I just want to ask you, like, what do you think right now, the purpose of DEI programs are? Because I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of companies are getting rid of it, is they don't even understand what the purpose of it is and what the value of it is.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that I hope comes out of this whole reckoning around diversity, inclusion, belonging, and equity work is that we start to change the language of how we talk about it. Right. I feel like that we've been overdue for overhaul of how we talk about equity and inclusion work for a very long time. And I hope that, you know, that out of this sort of, you know, these attacks, that we come out of it stronger. I honestly think that the purpose of most of it is for us to have is for companies and corporations to have more equitable and reciprocal relationships with their employees. And with the communities where they live and where they actually serve and work, right? And so if you think about, African Americans make up 14% of the US population. And if you're a major corporation, particularly one that sells products or services to a large base and a large portion of your consumer base is Black, then you have a responsibility not to just sell products to those folks, but you have a responsibility to actually be corporate citizens so that your workforce is actually reflective of your consumer base. 92% of the population growth that has happened in this country alone has come from communities of color, Black folks, Latinos, Asian folks. 90%, over 90% of the population growth that has happened in this country has come from consumers of color. So if you don't have a multicultural strategy in terms of how you outreach to consumers, if you sell consumer products, you don't have a growth strategy. And if you do not have a workforce that is reflective of the consumer base that you're trying to reach, then you are committing professional malpractice, because you need people inside of your organization to help you decode culture, to help you understand that consumer base and what it is that they actually need and want. And so for me, I don't want you to just, I don't want company, DE, part of what DEI is supposed to do is I don't want companies to start just recruiting people into a burning building, right? I look at some of these companies that have, that are out giving bottles of water to Black folks when the Black folks inside the building are on fire. And I feel like that that is the exact opposite of how DEI is supposed to work. You're supposed to treat your employees well so that you can then have better relationships with them, more reciprocity with them, but also more reciprocity with your consumer base. And that doesn't mean just only having people of color in the front line, working in the actual stores. That means having people of color at corporate too, making the $100,000 and $200,000 a year jobs just as much, and having a pathway for the people who have served in the on the front line of your organization. Are you building actual pathways for them to then come and be and work in corporate to be better consultants to how you can do that business better, because they have firsthand experience as well as understanding analysis and data and stuff like that? I think when we start talking about equity, right? How do we hire more equitably? How do we hire more fairly and more equitably? How do we then treat employees more equitably once they get inside of the building? That to me is what diversity and inclusion is about, right? And how we treat employees and give them a space where they can come and actually be authentic and have their authenticity be seen as an asset and not a blocker, right? That we set up a culture that is inclusive and opening to everybody, right? And that means this, that means inclusive to people who don't call God what you call God, or maybe don't even call on God at all, right? And that people can come in and thrive, and you're so centered on the work that the culture around the work becomes inclusive, but culture being somewhat secondary at that point.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. That's the way I think about it, but I'm Black, and I want everybody to be able to come to work and get paid what they supposed to get paid and get paid equally and equitably, right? And so there's a little bit of that, you know, we've seen all the research, man, that says that diverse companies actually perform better. We've seen all the research that says that. But what we also know is that people, when it comes to things that feel cultural and societal, people don't always make their decisions based on the numbers like they do every other decision at work, right? And so I'm hoping that one of the things that comes out of the future of DEI work is that we stop talking so much about how many people we recruited into the organization, and we start to equally talk about how many bad actors we exited out of the corporation, right? Because I think that's the number I want to see in every DEI report from moving forward, is how many people who said crazy stuff to women and Black folks and people of color and queer people, how many people who said crazy stuff to them did we fire? That's when, because people need, well, you know what people understand better than numbers? It's consequences. And a lot of the DEI work don't have no consequences.
Or they don't have transparent consequences.
Right.
Transparent to everybody what's going on. That's good, man. Yeah. All right, last one, man. What's the best way to use LinkedIn? I've been using LinkedIn for a minute, and I still don't understand what the best way to use LinkedIn is. My wife, she's a master of it, but I need from you, what's the best way to use LinkedIn?
Best way to use LinkedIn is to actively participate in it, right? You need to have a solid picture on there. You don't have to necessarily go out and have professional headshots. Just no beach selfies unless you want to be a surf instructor, right? So like a picture of you on how you're going to look on the first day of work is great, because you're much more likely for people to actually connect with you if you have a picture on there. It makes it feel like I'm having a conversation with a real person. LinkedIn now actually verifies your identity, so nobody can impersonate you. I would say go through the verification process. It's easy. All it is a couple of emails so that people actually know that they're talking to you. The other thing I would say is to really put your skills all throughout, using keywords for skills, the skills you have, I'm a good writer, I'm a good project manager, I'm a great speaker, I know these coding languages, I have these certifications, I have AI skills, etc. Make sure that you're using those words in your summary that you have on your LinkedIn profile. The other thing is your profile, your LinkedIn profile and your resume should probably match up pretty well. And use words in your summaries of your jobs and the jobs that you've had that actually talk about impact, but also, again, skills. Because literally, recruiters are going and searching for the skills that they need and that they're looking for, and that's how they find you. If somebody is actually looking for a job, even if you have a job, you can turn on what's called open to work. It doesn't have to, you don't have to put it that little ring around your picture that says open to work, but you can. If you turn on open to work, it literally takes you to the top of the algorithm for recruiters. You can turn it on in stealth mode. And actually, if recruiters are looking and they work at your same company, they won't be able to see that you're open to work. But recruiters at other companies will be able to. It's a great feature. It takes you to the top of the algorithm. The other thing I would say is that if you are actively looking for a job, there's a feature called Job Alert. You can go in and put in the criteria for the jobs that you're looking for. Say, I'm looking for a job in communications in Huntsville, Alabama, but I'll look in these other geographies. You list out your criteria. Every time a job posts on LinkedIn that meets your criteria, you immediately get an email into your inbox that says, yo, a job just popped that meets all of your standards, right? It gives you the opportunity to look for a job while you're eating, while you're sleeping, while you're working at your other job. And it sends an email directly to your inbox. I would say early bird gets the worm. Reach out to that recruiter as soon as you get that inbox, because it's a lot. It's a competitive market out there right now. The other thing I would say is participate. Go on LinkedIn, not just when you're looking for a job, but definitely when you are looking for a job. Follow companies that you're interested in working for and follow people that you actually respect. And I think the other thing is, like, when you post about work in your industry. The thing that I would say to people is think about what it is that you do better than anybody else, what your superpower is, and start to, like, think about what your posts are about. Think talking about things that are related to your skill set. Even if that's posting an article by that, you know, about your industry that you think is really interesting and insightful. Because when you share it, it starts the wheels of the algorithm turning. So you show up in front of more people. Connect to people, right? It does not have to be your work best friend for you to connect with people. Connect with your frat brothers, or connect with people that who are alums. Connect with people that you used to work with at your former job. If you're really involved in your church life or in other social things, connect with people that you know from those places too, because your connections beget connections, right? And so that's how you start to build out your network. Those are my top tips for LinkedIn. But I would also say is that if you have a side hustle, LinkedIn is amazing for people with side hustles, because you can actually create a LinkedIn service page that's about, like, hey, I'm a freelance writer, or I do freelance, you know, creative work, or, you know, digital work, all that kind of stuff. You can do that as well. And it's a great way for people who are actively looking for somebody in the gig economy to find you and say, oh, yo, what would you think about this particular project? And the way it sets it up in your inbox to let you just go through and look at the inbounds that you get based on people who are looking for whatever your side hustle is actually pretty good. Black women entrepreneurs are thriving on LinkedIn because of service pages and because they actually are connecting with each other to information shared. They're sharing information with each other, like, yo, this is how I set up my LLC, or these are the things that my tax guy told me that I need to be doing. This is how I'm starting to think about whether or not I'm going to go to this conference. Is it worth my money to actually go to this conference? Oh, let's share a booth. Like, sisters are telling us stuff like that as well.
So a service page would be good, because what I'm really looking to do right now is do some consulting work and some part-time work. So it'd be good to just put a service page up for something like that.
Absolutely. And talk about what your skills are. You don't even have to put, like, all of your rate information, stuff like that. It's just enough to whet the person's appetite so that they know what your skills are, what you're interested, what you're open to being hired for. I mean, I will say that, like, when I took a break from corporate America for a year, And I did some consulting work. It did, like, I was on the speaker circuit, and almost all of the work that I did in that year was people who found me on LinkedIn, who were searching for me based on what I was, you know, based on my LinkedIn profile. And it was great for me. I will say that. The other thing I will say too is, it's not just about jobs, it's about opportunity. And some of those opportunities are freelance opportunities. And definitely the other thing I would say for anybody who's listening to this is that remote work is highly competitive right now, but 56% of Black folks live in the South. And there are, if you want a job in tech, and you want to still be in Jacksonville, Florida, or you still want to be in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, or you still want to be in Atlanta or New Orleans, there's opportunities for remote work still out there where you can have a tech job without being in the Bay, or you can have a media job without being in Manhattan. I left Harlem, and I'm now living in Atlanta. And you know, my company is based in the Bay. I don't live in San Francisco. I'm not moving to Oakland so that I can work in San Francisco. I'm going to be in Atlanta, right? And so I think that for people who are listening to this, like, really start to investigate remote work opportunities too, particularly if you're at, you know, in a geography that may not be as progressive around diversity and inclusion and belonging, or that may not be as progressive around hiring Black folks at more senior levels. There may be opportunities for you to still get hired at senior levels at companies that are progressive, right? They just don't happen to be in your state.
Appreciate that, man. Definitely appreciate you taking the time out. You know, Corey liked to say he Iverson the question. I was Iverson today. I was doing my but I'm gonna let you go, man. I appreciate you, man.
I hope I got some swishes in there somewhere. So,
oh, man, you got a lot. You scored about 40.
So. I got one last question for you. Ask all our guests, man. You enjoying yourself on Black Men Sundays, brother?
Oh, bruh. It's amazing. I'm hoping I say something that y'all invite me back.
but you know, I'm cool with your publicist Owen. So you in good hands, man.
Hey, that's what's up. That's what's up. Owen's a good kid. Yeah, I gotta stop calling people in their 20s kids. He's a good guy. I gotta stop calling people in their 20s kids.
I feel you, man. I feel you. So let's before I let you go, man. You said you had something you wanted to say real quick.
I wanted to talk just a quick second about this whole AI thing, right? I think artificial intelligence is coming to work. It's at work already. One of the things that we had a candid conversation with Black folks on our platform about AI, and you know, a lot of times my homegirl always says, she was like, when my white coworkers are talking about AI, they all excited, but my Black folks, when we leave out the room, we like the devil is busy when we start seeing some of the stuff this technology can do. And so what I wanted to do was, I really wanted us to talk to Black professionals about how they were feeling about AI. And what we found out was that a lot of Black professionals were actually kind of excited about AI, but more than 60% of them said they did not know where to start learning about AI and learning AI skills. And so we went back into the lab at LinkedIn and said, okay, this is what we're seeing, this is what we're hearing. And what I truly believe is that for most of us, AI might not take our jobs, but somebody who understands AI could end up being our boss or our manager, right? And so what I want us to do is to be in the best position possible so that we can start to harness this technology and learn about it and not be on the back ends and be on the front end of it. So LinkedIn has opened up our top 10 AI courses, the most in-demand AI courses on our platform. They are free for everybody. You do not have to have LinkedIn Premium. If you want to see the list, it goes from AI 101, that tells you what a large language model is and how AI works, all the way up to people who code and being able to use better, like, prompt engineering. And those courses are free all the way through the end of the summer, through the end of July. If you follow me on LinkedIn, Andrew McCaskill, AndrewMcCaskill, you can go to my newsletter. It's called The Black Guy in Marketing. I list out all the AI courses. You can hit the links and take all 10 for free. These are the courses that companies are actually commissioning and paying for their employees, and we're making them available free through the end of July. I really want us to think about this AI revolution, because it is going to change how most of us do work. It's going to change a lot of job categories. I don't think that we should be afraid of the machine, but we need to start racing with the machine so we have the right skills to control the machine so the machine doesn't control us, right? And so I really want to like put that in the ear of, you don't have to be an engineer. You don't have to be a tech guru to understand how to use AI and how to build AI skills. And I really want that for all Black professionals to start to understand this, because at some point, AI is going to enter the chat of our jobs every day. And I want us to be able to talk and talk big.
No, I appreciate that, man, because, you know, when I look at AI, like I'm more on the news editing side. So, you know, I downloaded the new Adobe. The Photoshop's got the AI built in. The Illustrator's got the AI built in. I see people sending me letters with chat. What's it called? Chat GPT. I'm like sitting here looking at them like, come on, man. I know that's AI. Like, y'all playing yourselves. Yep. You sending me that. I already know. But yep. My thing with the AI is I'm starting to see people starting to get sued for the AI, because whatever code they're putting in, a lot of people are putting that in certain code words, things of that sort, are starting to kind of soil AI a little bit. So for me, I still feel like the creativity in doing what you do still is the king until you figure out how to master the AI, man. So,
yeah. Listen, yeah, the future of work is still human. Don't get it. I don't want anybody to get it twisted. But we humans are going to be asked to use these tools. And I want Black folks to be at the head and not the tail as it relates to it.
Definitely, man. I appreciate that, man. Andrew McCaskill, thanks for coming on Black Men Sundays, man. This brother's a cultural analyst, marketing executive. This brother's married to the culture. He said all three dream girls follow him. So, you know.
All three.
Wow.
Married to the culture, man.
Yeah, man. There we go. So I appreciate you for coming on Black Men Sundays. Hope you had a great time. Thanks for speaking with us. I got your, I have your publicist information. So we'll definitely be speaking again, brother. Enjoy the rest of your week and enjoy your day, brother. Peace.
Hey, peace, man. Thank y'all. Thanks for having me, bro. It's a Black Man Sunday.